Hello, Bugle listeners. This is Pastor Jeffs. God has put it on my heart to share with you prophetic visions of what is yet to come. The Lord has called us all to respect authority and to be able to afford our taxes. For the United States is a Christian nation and Donald Trump is ordained by the Lord. Last week, I was praying to the Lord and I saw a vision of what is to come. The Lord showed me a rocket ship blasting up into the heavens. The rocket ship was built by Elon Musk, but funded by your tax money. It was a rocket ship destined to save our great Christian nation from complete and utter destruction. Are you listening to the Lord like I am? Do you hear the call of NGU? If you are, you will know that my words are true. But remember, this is not financial advice. Only Jesus can give you financial advice. If you trust in the Lord, you will know where to invest so that you will be able to afford your taxes. As I saw this vision of what is yet to come, I heard a voice from the heavens speak to me. A dove came down from the clouds, and the voice said, "I am God, and I will bring a pump that makes all others before it seem trivial. Those who have put their faith in me and DCA'd on KYC exchanges will never have to worry about being able to afford their taxes ever again."
Welcome to this edition of the Bugle Weekly, the most thermodynamically sound podcast ever produced. Do you smell the change on the horizon? The shift of the Overton window is undeniable. As podcasters, we are documenting history. Through these conversations, we are preserving knowledge for generations yet to come. When your kids and grandkids listen to this, they will know the importance of what you have been a part of. By listening to 40 hours of podcasts a week, you are solidifying our bright orange future. Thank you. Thank you for being a Bitcoin podcast listener. And thank you for being a Bugle Weekly listener. We hope you enjoy the show. You are the change that the world needs. Now buckle up, because here are your hosts, Rod Palmer and Richard Greaser.
Welcome to this edition of the Bugle Weekly. Joining me today, as usual, is Rod Palmer. How you doing, Rod?
Doing fantastic, Richard. What a big week, what a huge weekend, and we're heading into an even bigger week tomorrow. Donald Trump takes over, he takes president, he's going to free Ross, he's going to set up a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I don't know, I haven't looked at the numbers since this morning, but as of this morning, Trump's shitcoin, which we're going to get into the crypto ball that he launched, Trump coin, this weekend, Donald Trump made upwards of $50 billion USDT. From his shitcoin, and people are saying that he is going to, like everybody else, use his profits from shitcoining, and he's going to buy Bitcoin with it. So we can expect somewhere in the range, if his profits hold, a $50 billion USDT smash buy into Bitcoin. New all-time highs this week. It's very, very bullish.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's bullish for different reasons. One of the things that he's promising to do is to declassify all these files about JFK, RFK, and MLK, and essentially prove that the U.S. intelligence agencies were involved in their assassinations, which to me leads me to think that when he declassifies that, more people are going to become based. They're going to spin up Bitcoin podcasts. and the price is going to go up because of that.
Absolutely. And last night, yesterday was the big crypto ball in Washington, D.C. You probably saw pictures on the timeline of people in tuxedos getting stoned with Snoop Dogg and Michael Saylor, Natalie Brunel, some of the crypto people, big time shitcoiners. And people were asking, what was this crypto ball? And besides being probably even a better party than the Michael Saylor 100K party on the yacht in Miami, it's kind of a Geneva Convention. It's like, we out-complied the government. We defeated them in November. And it's time to rewrite the rules of what it means to be compliant as Bitcoiners in the digital asset space. So, David Bailey, some of the biggest Bitcoin podcasters, crypto founders, VCs, crypto and Bitcoin influencers, they have all gathered and they were getting drunk and talking to feds and people who've been to Diddy parties, and they are rewriting the rules of compliance. But compliance cantillionaire ball is maybe what it should have been called, because we are going to rewrite all the rules in the next few months. And it all kicked off last night.
Yeah. I mean, Natalie Brunel definitely put out a strong statement to AOC, letting AOC know that she's no longer the dictator of compliance means, and that there's a new sheriff. Or
AOC wore a very famous dress that said tax the rich a few years ago. And with the new Trump administration, with the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, and with him pumping Bitcoin's price, everybody's going to be able to afford their taxes. Taxing the rich, that's kind of like saying, you know, vaccinate for polio. We've all done that. It's covered. And now it's time, now that everybody can afford their taxes, it's time to fix the money. And fixing the money means the dollar is broken and it needs to be fixed with Bitcoin. If we can use the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve to back the dollar, Bitcoin fixes us, right? Bitcoin fixes the dollar. So now everybody can afford their taxes and we've fixed fiat currency. There's no impedance to fixing the rest of the world now.
Yeah, I think what fixing the money really means is it takes economic policy out of the hands of bankers and central bankers and puts it in the hands of Bitcoin podcasters.
Right. It puts it in the hands of the people who have been doing the work to understand all the problems in society and what needs to be fixed with a hard, sound money. And it's putting them to work doing it. No longer do we have PhD economists who have not been out in the world. They have not listened to hours and hours of the best orange pilling stories from plebs on Bitcoin podcasts. They've only been studying, you know, fiat economics. So they don't know how to fix things. They only know how to make more, you know, academic models. But Bitcoin podcasters have like a backlog of all of these problems that have been fixed by plebs in their local areas with Bitcoin. And now they can extrapolate that to fix the rest of the world.
Totally. I mean, Bitcoin podcasters have to fix all sorts of problems. They have to be flexible. So, like when you're in the middle of an interview, for example, with somebody important, somebody that has a lot of speaking engagements, somebody that might get frustrated at you if you have technical difficulties, you have to be able to think on your feet and be able to ask good questions in the interview, as well as figure out why your hardware isn't working at the same time. And that's the type of problem solving and leadership that we need in Washington.
That they don't. The people in Washington up until this point have not been able to adapt and to be flexible in the face of technical difficulties. They face technical difficulties and they freeze and they panic and they just let their PR person spin the problem to make it seem like it's actually good. But that doesn't actually help anybody. But being able to adjust on the fly and still put out a good podcast episode, if you can do that, there's really not much you can't do.
100%.
Go ahead.
The problem isn't that people have power over things that they shouldn't have power over. The problem has been that the wrong people are in control and power, right?
Right. It's about problem solving. It's about problem solving skills. If you can figure out your podcast setup, whether you use Riverside or one of these other platforms, or if you can connect your Bitcoin Core node to an Electrum server and then connect Sparrow Wallet to it and then use your cold card to connect to the Sparrow Wallet, you have to watch. Some people have to watch over 10 hours of BT sessions tutorials to be able to do just half of what I just talked about. And some people now can do that on the fly under 5 minutes. If you can connect your own Bitcoin Core node and use a cold card, you can do it. You can fix welfare. You can fix the education system. Think about anything you learned in school. How many hours you had to study and sit in class and be bored. Replace that with a BT Sessions tutorial. Replace that with a Bitcoin podcast. That's an hour long at most. The rest of your day is now wide open as a student to fix problems that you just learned how to solve.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it. So like libertarians kind of have this silly idea, which is that taxation is theft, right? And I know it feels like that when the IRS agents, you know, come in and shaking you down when you can't afford your taxes aren't phased. But the problem is we just have the wrong people doing it. It's not that taxation is theft. It's that the taxers aren't phased. And that's something that's changing and will change with Bitcoin podcasters at the helm deciding what the new face of compliance looks like.
Speaking of the new face of compliance, we mentioned it briefly, but have you been following Trump Coin?
Very little.
Well, it's only been around for about 20 hours. I'm looking for the market cap here. It is enormous. I mean, it started at zero. And now it is at data unavailable. Coinbase fucking sucks. What is like a good? Well, anyway, it was over 55 billion up to 70 billion market cap. And Trump, his wallet, the pre-mine, so to speak, bailed 80% of it. So that's why I talked about when Trump realizes he's got 50, 70, $100 billion in profit that he made in like 2 days. Where's he going to store that? Where's he going to store that profit? Bitcoin, of course. So, like, not only is this Trump coin, which some people might see this as degeneracy, gambling, scamming, but Donald Trump's going to rug pull all of the degenerate meme coin scammers. When he pulls out of this, he's going to put it into Bitcoin. He's going to benefit Plex. He's going to benefit Savers, DCA. Everybody who's Bitcoin only, they're going to be the beneficiaries of this huge pump. So sometimes you have to, you know, break a few eggs to make an omelet. People are really critical of Trump's shitcoin, but at the end of the day, it's going to massively benefit Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that's pretty apparent. One of the shifts, you know, as we're talking about government becoming more based, one of the big shifts that I see on the horizon is the shift from insider trading. People know that all these politicians, so like Elizabeth Warren's a good example, right? where she only makes like $300,000 a year, but she's worth like $30 million. Essentially what these politicians have done is they're not compensated properly for all the value they provide the world, you know, because they're essentially dictating the success of the U.S. economy. They're, you know, writing the legislation that helps support economic stimulus for the military industrial complex. They allocate money to the CIA and different groups which promote dollar hegemony globally.
They are managing the health of essentially the underlying value of Tether on Tron. So they are managing the health of Tron users in the global south, not just American citizens. And one of the problems with taxes, we talked about this, that it was just a broken, not thermodynamically sound system. But with this new administration coming in, it's realigning to what taxes were originally supposed to be. It was supposed to be the fundamental underlying foundation of the value for value economy. You get value from the government when it is based, and in return, you send value back to the government in the form of taxes. And when that value for value relationship becomes non-coercive, it becomes a true value for value exchange, then you have a healthy society.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the big shifts that we're seeing, you know, is I don't think politicians like Elizabeth Warren or Nancy Pelosi, who've been making all their money from insider trading, are going to be able to make money off of meme coins in the same way that Trump will.
Right.
And that's because they represent their corporate donors and the individuals giving them the inside information. But the plebs don't have inside information that can make them a lot of money, oftentimes, outside of just being able to tell them to buy Bitcoin.
Right.
The plebs have that inside information because they listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. But yeah, if you make essentially bribing politicians more open source and based on popularity like meme coins are, it really opens the door for a better, more thermodynamically sound world, in my opinion.
And the solution seems obvious in hindsight, but it requires a lot of will. It requires a lot of collective public will. And I think that looking back at these fires in Los Angeles, and you have a place like California where the taxes are higher than anywhere else in the country, and you have this Palisades fire, it destroyed thousands of homes in one of the zip codes where people can afford their taxes more than just about anywhere else in the country. And you see this devastation. And there's a lot of people that saw this and they looked at themselves and they looked at each other, or they just thought internally, if this can happen to people who can afford their taxes, it can happen to anybody. If we don't fix this system, we can lose everything. And so people are going to be looking for much more value for their tax dollars spent than what they were getting previously. And it's kind of on us as citizens, as taxpayers. We did not demand enough integrity and enough value back for the taxes we were paying. And we let it be spent on ditty parties and Ukraine and Israel. And it's like bombs seem really cool. And if you say a bomb cost $1 billion, and then you see a super based video on YouTube of a bomb like that blows up like the bottom of a mountain, like miles below, you're like, wow, that was definitely worth $1 billion. But it's hard to verify that. And you start to say, well, maybe that $1 billion could have gone towards filling fire hydrants with water, or making sure the rainwater went into the reservoirs that we spent $100 billion building before, so that when we have a fire, there's water to put it out. And not just, you just extrapolate that even further, the services and just the different value that the government can provide. And people are like, I want to see those tax dollars spent here. And I'm willing to pay more taxes if my Bitcoin's going up 10x to be sure that my house doesn't burn down, because I have a lot of Bitcoin on my seed phrase that's backed up on a piece of paper. And if my house burns down, I lose it. So we need the government to protect the infrastructure, to protect our hardware wallets.
Definitely. Yeah. Very well said. We had a discussion with Mars. He was the last guest we had on Behind the Podcast. One of the things that he thought was really important was the role of Karens in our society. And we know that if the Karens were in power, there would have been water in the fire hydrants instead of dollars sent to Ukraine.
Right.
That's really the problem, is like the Karens have been captured, essentially. Like they're sitting in Washington, D.C., harassing Trump's nominees. Like that's what the Karens are being used for, instead of being used to go after those people and making sure there's water in the fire hydrants. It's a real problem.
Just think about how many times you're out in public and maybe you're at a restaurant or a convenience store or the DMV, and you're just thinking to yourself, man, I'm not going to lie, I kind of wish there was a Karen right now to ask to see the manager, because I don't know what's going on here. Like, the service here is terrible. And that's, whether it's at Starbucks or at the IRS or at the Department of Education, it's time for Karens to be allowed to ask to see the manager. It's time for the managers to be held accountable. I mean, you go to some of these places, you go to some of these restaurants, some of these stores, they don't even have a manager. They don't even staff managers anymore, because nobody is going to complain and ask to see the manager, because they so successfully silenced and distracted the Karens, who have kind of, we didn't realize, were the first responders. When there was a problem, who was the first responder? Not the police, not the fire department. It was the Karen who thought to call them in the first place. And we just need more of that. Like we said, we talked about this with Mars, but the accountability level is just not there if you don't have a Karen to demand it.
Yeah. They're very clear. They keep the bar much higher. This is one of the problems I think a lot of normal people have, which is they just kind of want to get along with people. You know, even if they're unhappy about something, they're not willing to rock the boat and say something.
But a Karen is not afraid to transact adversarially. Mm-hmm. Karens thrive on transacting adversarially. And there's just, sometimes you think the incentives are aligned so that you don't have to trust a third party. You don't have to, you know, everything which should be in a free market. Like, if they don't provide good service, they're going to go out of business. But we kind of forget that it's up to us to keep those free market competition standards and those incentives aligned properly, because they're very, very easy to misalign.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been a concerted effort to pacify the Karen population. And I think a big part of it has been trying to get women in the workplace, right? So they've invented these jobs like HR and compliance, which are geared a lot more towards women. They've expanded the workforce to essentially grow the tax base. And like these women that otherwise would be Karens are too busy trying to work their asses off to be able to afford their taxes all day. So they don't have the time or energy to ensure that their order at Starbucks is correct, because they have to get to work. There's taxes to be paid.
Right, right. And it seems like the demonization of Karens boils down to the fact that people are kind of like upset that Karens had the audacity to hold society accountable to having higher standards. If you're a taxpayer, if you can afford your taxes, you deserve at least the bare minimum of standards of service, of standards of care, of standards of respect. And it's, I think, starting tomorrow, by January 20th, it's going to be worth it to afford your taxes.
I mean, one of the pillars of the Bushido of Bitcoin, I think we're aligned with Alex Jesky here, right? So like one of the things that he really believes in is that women shouldn't vote. He is for as little distraction as possible. Like there's something a lot of people don't talk about is the importance of having kids. Why is it important for women Karens to have kids? One of the reasons is because it gets them out in society, right? It makes them tired, it puts them on edge, it makes them more in a mindset where they're willing to demand higher standards. If they don't have kids and they're too busy, you know, focusing on their career of being a taxpayer, they just aren't going to see the world in the same way, and they're not going to have as many reasons to demand higher standards.
Yeah. Right, right. Like having screaming children is going to put a Karen at her wit's end. And a Karen at her wit's end is not going to put up with substandard value, substandard service that somebody who can afford their taxes deserves. She doesn't have time to deal with the bullshit. So she's going to speak up and ask to see the manager.
And that's why it's one of the pillars of the Bushido of Bitcoin. You know, if we want to see this hyper-Bitcoinized society, there needs to be an army of Karens dismantling fiat.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with Spetsky on everything, but on his stance towards women's roles in society, I think he's spot on. I think that's probably where he is the most accurate.
There's definitely some points to be taken seriously there.
Yeah, and I think that he is in a unique position to see this part of society and kind of have this perspective because, you know, it's not his fault, but he was born really short. So I think a lot of women kind of, they treat him like a young child. And so he's able to see how these women, these Karens, would treat him, you know, if they were his, he was their child. And he just notices the change in their behavior, the change in their perspective when they are around somebody who is fussy and short as him.
Well, I kind of want to go back, talk a little bit more about Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Do you think there's any potential for him to put up some Pepe paintings in the White House?
One of the criticisms, and, you know, depending on your perspective, one of the things he was praised for his first administration was they redesigned like the Rose Garden. They redesigned some of the paintings and artwork. And I think, especially out with Barron to help him, we may see some Pepe paintings put up, some NFTs, maybe some dick butts, like some digital NFTs displayed in the Oval Office. It's going to be a cultural renovation of the halls of DC, of the White House itself. And it's going to reflect more, of the tastes and aesthetics of people who can afford their taxes now.
Yeah. I think people are really sleeping on the importance of having the first sitting president owning meme coins. Or having launched Bitcoin.
It would be really cool if, like, what's Tommy from Bitcoin Magazine? He's got some really good Pepe art It'd be really cool to see, like, Donald Trump giving some sort of press briefing about, you know, the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas with a Pepe painting behind him.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to see him give Tommy a Medal of Freedom.
So, for sure.
I think a lot of Bitcoin podcasters are going to be getting Medals of Freedom. I think it's going to be incredible. One thing I'm kind of wondering, what do you think the odds that he pardons Hawk Tua for her meme coin shenanigans?
I think he's going to have to do it. People are really upset about Hawk Tua. Her podcast was really popular. It hasn't been put out since the rug pull of the Hawk Tua coin. And she just needs to not have to worry about, I mean, right now she's so worried about affording her taxes that she can't create the high quality content that we got so used to for like 6 months this year before it got pulled from us. And I think that's another thing. Now that people can afford their taxes, they're going to have a lot more free time, not just Hawk Tua. And the content that they're going to create, the YouTube videos, the Bitcoin podcasts, it's going to be a renaissance. And I think that it should start with who being pardoned and getting back to the regular cadence of podcasting content that she was putting out. Because like we said, if Ross gets freed tomorrow, a lot of the credit needs to go to Hawk Tua for getting that across the line.
At times, the Lord seeks to test our faith in the face of adversity. Between the FTX collapse, Operation Chokepoint 2.0, and general anti-crypto attitudes of the establishment, you may have felt like Job. You may have lost everything and, like Job, are questioning God. But how can you, a mere finite mortal, even begin to question the motives of the Lord, who spoke the universe into existence? Do you know the true amount of all the meme coins in existence? Do you know all the identities of individuals transacting on the blockchain? You don't even know how many hairs are on your head, but the Lord does. The Lord said to Job, "Who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set, or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy, why do you question the Lord, listener? Will you lose faith just because things are hard? The Lord sent me a vision of what is yet to come, a vision of a world without inflation that is funded by free markets instead of coercion. A world where the U.S. government remains solvent and the dollar operates globally on blockchains. A world full of hope and meme coins. Hope is not lost because the Lord is in control. Find your faith in these trying times and you will be rewarded."
Totally. I just think the Bitcoin community in general should be rallying behind her in the same way that they rallied behind Donald Trump.
100%.
Like, one thing I will say about Donald Trump that's kind of interesting is I don't think he's ever passed a purity test. I don't think he can pass a single purity test. And yet so much of the larger community supports him.
I don't know if anybody can. I think that is the lesson to be learned, that if he can't pass that purity test, how can anybody else be expected to?
Well, I definitely think there are people that pass the purity test, right? So typically the person who's best suited to pass the purity test is the one that creates the purity test. So individuals like Jimmy Song, Lederer, Francis at Bold Bitcoin, those are kind of...
Right, but we need decentralized purity tests, not centralized purity tests. And what would that look like? I mean, Fino, where were you going with that? What do you think about his ability to pass that? What consequences do you think will come from some of these very high standard critics of his?
Well, I think the fact that he is being met with so much approval, and yet he isn't able to pass any purity test, mean that the Overton window, as far as what is seen as acceptable by the Bitcoin podcaster community, is shifting pretty radically, and is shifting pretty quickly.
What sort of standards do you think? Do you think we need new standards for politicians who claim to be orange-pilled? Do you think that we should not let good be the enemy of perfect?
I just think people need to be, you know, very specific with what their standards are, and to announce very clearly when they switch. So I almost think the way to do it is all these Bitcoin podcasters should essentially have GitHub pages where they can open source their standards that they hold people to, right? And anytime those standards change, they need to change it on the GitHub page. So that's open source. And the reason why I think that is because to many casual Bitcoin podcast listeners, they might not be aware that the standards have changed, right? They might just think that the person's holding these individuals to the same standards as they were 3 months ago.
Right. If you like deactivated your X account in 2022 and you came back this week, you might see a lot of people being celebrated and praised for what they're doing in the space, and think, wait a minute, like these guys are huge shit coiners. Why is everybody giving them a pass? But you don't understand, like the standards have changed. The standards have now changed. If you're good for NGU, it's just you kind of get a pass. But there needs to be like a status page, or like you said, a GitHub repo where you can see the latest versions to see which, you know, node we're all operating, software we're operating on.
Yeah. So I think that would be one of the first steps to decentralizing purity tests, would be open sourcing Bitcoin podcasters standards. Like, one of the people I really want to hold their feet to the fire on, because it's very murky where their standards are, is Joe Nakamoto.
Well, good point. Yeah. I mean, he is, you know, he will call out a meme coiner, but, you know, he is essentially on Tether payroll.
Yeah. And that's not clear to people.
Right. Like, PodConf gave GM3 and Samson a compliance waiver for Tether, but that was not extended to Joe Nakamoto. And people think that just because Samson got a Tether waiver, that Joe Nakamoto gets one, but that's not how it works.
Totally. Like, you know, Samson's very clear with where his standards are, right? Like, he wears Tether t-shirts. He talks about Tether. It's very clear. But with Joe, it almost presents like he has different standards than he actually does. And it's kind of confusing.
And right, Mike Samson doesn't really like crucify people for using Tether or using some of these other like Liquid and some of these other protocols that are just not on-chain Bitcoin only, but Nakamoto does. And, you know, same, it's like Jack Mallers works very closely with Tether, uses Tether extensively in his Strike app, But he doesn't ridicule people for their, you know, imperfections. But Joe he's very critical. He's very critical of Mark. He's very of Mark Goodwin. He's very critical of the ungovernable misfits for their use of Monero. But he doesn't extend that same criticism and that same high level of standards to Bitfinex or any of these Tether outfits. He doesn't extend that to El Salvador, etc.
Like, pretty much all we need, like, if you're against freedom, I'm just asking you to declare that publicly. Just explain to people. Here's my policies. I want to prevent people from thinking for themselves. I want to prevent people from smoking cigarettes. I want to make it harder for you to afford your taxes. I want you to be surveilled more. Just be clear about it. If that's actually your stances, just be clear about it. Be honest. And it's almost like affinity scamming. You know what I mean? Where they try to ride off the coattails of other people. They don't ever say they're pro-freedom, but they, you know, associate as if they are. And so individuals just kind of lump them in. Oh, you have Nakamoto in your username. You must like, you know, this set of beliefs that, you know, are kind of generally accepted as okay, that most people have on their purity test.
And speaking of this, one of our topics tonight, Mark Zuckerberg went on Joe Rogan, and he has gone through a credible transformation. He's become very based, and he's one of the things he wants to do, and we talked about this previously, was he's unleashing the Karens on Facebook. They've been in Facebook jail due to lack of free speech. But now he's pro-free speech. And that is, you know, the circumstances, free speech is good. But we don't know enough about Mark and his beliefs to know what his positions were before. Why did he change? What did he think about free speech before it was easy to be against it because, you know, the government was working with him? But now that the government is more pro-free speech, we haven't really asked the question why. Why all of a sudden is the government, the deep state, Meta, Facebook, Twitter, why are these companies all of a sudden switching to be pro-free speech? It doesn't seem to make sense that the people in power want free speech. But why do you think that the sudden switch has come? And why do you think people like Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk and some Peter Thiel and some of these other big elites, why do you think that they're suddenly so pro-free speech?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And I think, like, another thing that people have failed to ask Mark Zuckerberg is, how did he change from like an autistic robot into like a genuine human being in such a short time? Like, how did that happen? But on the topic of becoming based all of a sudden, why are all these companies and Silicon Valley type individuals becoming based? I think part of the reason is because Bitcoin podcasters have had so much power in shaping culture in our country. The population is becoming more based, and these companies realize if they're going to continue to make money and continue to surveil the populace and control the information channels, they have to get the buy-in of the podcast listeners. There's so much emphasis put on the Bitcoin voting block and not enough emphasis put on, you know, people essentially voting with their wallets with all these different corporations or voting with their data and information. And we've seen this huge shift where people have moved to Twitter from Facebook because they're tired of not being allowed to be Karens. And when they pack up and move, they take all their user data with them, right? And so Zuckerberg no longer has that data to sell third parties. And yeah, huge, huge economic loss for these
companies. Another reason I suspect is because, you know, the past few years, there was a term that people became very familiar with called virtue signaling. Where you would say that you believed something, or that you, you know, held a political belief, is you just kind of looking for engagement and support for, you know, your account or your tweet or your post. And there was a lot of people, and you know, there was a lot of bots, a lot of spam, a lot of spoofing, civil attacks that, people were saying a lot of things, trying to game the algorithms or just get the certain reaction out of other followers and other people who were on their social media platform. But it didn't translate to action. At the end of the day, people who can afford their taxes are much more likely to vote. And when the censorship on these platforms was disproportionately censoring Bitcoin podcasts, people who could afford their taxes, it wasn't just Bitcoin podcasters, but that was obviously a very large amount of those people. And so Elon Musk had this data about how the election is going to turn out. And he was able to front run the election with, you know, his stock portfolio, his company. He could choose the candidate that he wanted to gain the most influence with. And because he had the uncensored data of people who could afford their taxes, and he knew which way the wind was blowing in terms of what they were going to do and get out and vote. The spoofing accounts, the bots, the foreign actors, the people who were just virtue signaling and saying whatever they thought could get the most reaction, they didn't necessarily have that incentive or were even going to go out and have the ability to vote, but the taxpayers could. And people like Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Peter Thiel, they noticed that. And now they want to open these platforms because the better signal they can get from taxpayers, the more they can optimize their operations, the profit from it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be a very interesting week. We didn't do it at all this episode. We're kind of running out of time. We should do this next week. We should do our predictions for 2025. But I'm predicting things are going to change very rapidly. There's going to be a constant shift in the Overton window. It's going to be cool to be a Karen. We're gonna see people that have been censoring people for saying the words gay and retarded. That's going to be a huge shift. I think there's going to be a huge reduction in the size of HR departments across the board. They're going to let the Jews run Hollywood again.
Yeah, we should, before we do our predictions for 2025 next week, we should try to figure out if we can get those predictions on Polymarket to see if we could get people voting on our prediction. I mean, if we had our predictions on Polymarket last year, I think people could have made a lot of money.
I mean, people are going to make a lot of money based off our predictions because they're going to take it as a way to strategize what decisions to make over the next year, how to position themselves. Because that's the role of journalists, right?
Right. That is journalism. Tunnel lost its way and people were kind of looking for confirmation bias, but at a certain point, if you can't trust the journalists and the news to make good decisions, economical, rational decisions for your company, your future, your family, that journalism, that news becomes, it's worthless. It's not valuable, regardless of how upset news or journalism might make you in certain circumstances. If it's accurate, you can use that data, that news, to make good decisions. And that's what people are looking for. They want to listen to journalists who will help them be able to afford their taxes in the future.
Well, I think one of the things I should probably do somewhere in the near future, I don't know where I'm going to find time to do this, but I should probably publish my standards on GitHub and announce any sort of changes. It'd be kind of
right. Like, yeah, at the very least, it's like we have a page with just a few basic standards, like, is Linalden hot? Yes. You know, things like that. And it goes down from there. And you can check that every day. And we can even put it in the show notes of the show. It's like, these are the standards that we're operating on for this podcast. If for some reason what we're saying doesn't make sense to you, you can go back and you can reference the standards page, the standards list, and say, oh, okay, based on this published standard, that opinion makes sense to me.
Yeah. And if you want to see any of our standards change, you can submit a pull request and then we'll decide whether we want to merge it or not. But that way,
yeah, absolutely.
Discussion around it. Well, anyways, should we get into the fountain boost?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a pretty good amount of fountain boost. Last week was the 2024 recap, episode 42. And the first boost, well, the total boost was 58,508. So 58,000, nice 58K, the good 2024 recap for sure. And the first boost was from John over at Ungovernable Misfits. He boosted us 21,000 sats. Great boost. Thank you, John. And I said, Fundamentals is a terrible Jew. Rumor has it he reattached his foreskin. Ouch, that sounds... I don't know where he got it. Can he save it? It's fun. I guess he saved it his whole life if he did that.
I mean, these are the things you could do when you save in Bitcoin. So, like, when you can afford to pay your taxes, you can also afford to reattach your foreskin. It just allows you to have a freedom that you couldn't have without it.
Well, it may make him a terrible Jew, but Fundamentals would love to hear more about that if you have a story to tell. About reattaching it and how others could reattach theirs if they wanted to.
Well, I think this is an interesting purity test, which Sean has created here for Jewish people.
Absolutely.
Do you think Donald Trump has his foreskin?
I guess we could ask Stormy Daniels. Apparently she would know. I don't know if she would reveal that information.
Yeah, I think part of her receiving the hush money is she can't tell anybody whether he has his foreskin or not. But another question that's kind of interesting, I wonder what type of purity test the Israelis have when they fly out politicians to kiss the wailing wall. Do you think they check and make sure the politicians...
That's interesting that you bring that up, because I heard about a story where sometimes Israel, they have a lot of Palestinian hostages and prisoners, and some of the higher level Hamas leaders, their wives and girlfriends will end up getting pregnant and having children years after their husband had, you know, been locked up in Israeli prisons. And the lore or the story behind that is that the people will smuggle out their sperm, and they'll take their sperm to their wives so they can still have children. And some people believe that these sperm smugglers are really, really, this network, they're really, really advanced. They're kind of like Delta Force sperm smugglers. And it's, you know, nobody ever thinks to do like a Maury Povich DNA test to see if their wives just cheated on them instead of having their sperm smuggled out of prison. They just assumed that their wives were pure and they would never do something like that. So a good purity test would be to like test some of these children of, you know, terrorists in prison to see if these sperm smugglers are as talented as they're given credit for.
There's a ton of ways to make purity testing more robust. And I think using things like analyzing genetic data and using AI to analyze.
We could add it to KYC. KYC can have purity tests involved.
Yeah. Well, it'd be really interesting to be able to, you know, measure purity tests based on people's private conversations in the group chats.
Absolutely. And AI to scrape that data would be great.
Yeah. There's some rumors that that's already in the works.
Interesting.
Well, thank you for the boost, John. Appreciate it. Have you ever noticed that John has two at symbols in his username?
I don't see that on my app. It's probably because I'm integrated with Nostr.
Oh, that makes sense.
The next one is 10,000 sats from one of our guy. I think he's boosted every single episode so far. From Pies, I better up my game to make sure I make next year's list of top boosters. So he boosted us 10,000 sats. Normally, Pies boosts like a couple hundred sats, 420 sats. This one was 10,000. So thank you for the big boost, Pies. It's pretty early and we get a lot of really big boosts. So we're going to need to see some more baller 10,000 plus sat boosts from you if you want to make next year's list. Because next year's list is probably going to be a lot harder to get on of the top boosters. But we really appreciate this one.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think the key to being a bigger booster is you have to go and earn more money. You know what I mean? And like, that's the thing that really shifts in the bull market. Like, the bull market's time to go make a lot of money.
And honestly, Pies listens to more Bitcoin podcasts than probably anybody out there. So if anybody can afford his taxes, I think it's Pies. So I think that his boosts should reflect that.
Agreed. Yeah, it's really time to take all that podcast listening you've done and apply it to real life, because you don't really get anywhere by just having all the knowledge locked up in your head. And this is where I think some people get stuck, is they forget that they need to actually apply the things that they listen to. So don't get too caught up in the listening to 40 hours part. There's also the implementing 40 hours a week, what you listen to. That's really important. Yeah. We appreciate you, Pies. Thank you for the 10,000 sat booth. And we look forward to having you as one of our biggest boosters over this next year. I think one of the challenges is to beat. So, like, who are, you remember our top three? I think it's John, Fundamentals, and Stackatoshi. Yeah. Well, our next boost is from Stackatoshi for 10,000 sats. It was a double boost, maybe like a fountain issue. So it's really 20,000 sats. Said, boys, .. WTF, your audio is horrendous, constantly cutting out. Here's some sats to help hire a producer, or at least get a new mic.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for that. I am actually going to, I'm buying that new mic tomorrow and using this boost to help go towards that. So appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm going to be going back to Nashville here pretty soon to go track Kaylee down. Do you see she tweeted the other night and said she's still alive? So that was good to see. That was encouraging.
Yeah, the Monero Bros did not sell her off to the feet pick sex slaves. So that's good to know. That was my biggest worry.
I think one of the challenges is there's just not enough big a pool of podcast producers that live up to our purity tests and standards. So like, our decisions are, we either significantly lower our standards for a producer, or we struggle without one. And I don't really have a good answer for what the best direction to go with that is.
But we just talked about it. Like, if we, Bitcoin podcasters, we're the biggest problem solvers. So rest assured, we will solve this problem.
Totally. Well, thank you for your boost, Stackatoshi.
The next one is from Fundamentals. He says, all this time, well, first of all, you boost us 10,000 sats. He said, all this time, I've been boosting with no ask to point my podcast. I must have gone to a horrible Hebrew school. Yeah, I mean, we talked about this. Fundamentals. He doesn't spend a lot of time and money promoting his own podcast. But, you know, he has started to recognize that issue, and he is taking steps to promote the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast a little bit more aggressively. And hopefully that that leads to more people. It's a very good show. Everybody should check it out. So hopefully he promotes that, markets that progressively in 2025.
Yeah. Fundamentals has other podcasts to promote. There's one on my list that I started listening to briefly. Let me pull it up real quick so I can see the name.
Yeah, he's got two. He's got one about fish, not the animal in the sea, but the jam band, PHISH. And he's got another one about math. So those are pretty exciting.
Yeah, I don't think the fish one is public yet. I don't think he's published it. So we've gotten in a little bit of a sneak peek to that. But the motivate, so his math podcast is called Motivate the Math, and it's Fundamentals and Average Gary. So that's exciting. I haven't listened to enough to comment. Typically math isn't very important in the career path of journalists. And I think most Bitcoin podcast listeners don't really know how to do math or care about it all that much, though some do. So there's definitely like a niche audience there. And then the people that historically haven't cared about math have an opportunity to go listen to people who care about math and figure out whether or not they should change their standards on that. Pretty exciting stuff. Well, you haven't asked us to promote your podcast, but I think we have every time anyways. Next boost, no comment from FOMO Chronic for 1,001 sats. Thank you very much, FOMO Chronic. I'll just read the next one too. From Orange Mart, our good friends at Orange Mart, 1,000 sats, one of our top boosters last year. Bada bing, bada boost. Thank you very much, Orange Mart.
Yep, and there's one more there at the bottom. Wartime, 333 sats with the fire and a cheers emoji. Thank you, Wartime, for your boost, and thank you to everybody who boosted and listened this week.
Well, you got any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I'm excited about 2025 predictions. So I think that one way to get in on this would be if you boost us this week, share one of your 2025 predictions with us, and we'll read that on the air, and we'll discuss that as well.
Yeah, I think before the month of January is over, everybody needs to publish their bingo card for 2025. I think that's pretty important activity. So we'll be working on that behind the scenes at the Beagle. I'll make sure we get a few of our writers on board with that, get their opinions. It'd be interesting to hear from Maggie Morris and Wayne Kerr and you on your bingo cards. And we'll see who wins. Maybe there'll be a prize at the end of the year for whoever gets the most correct predictions, or if you I think a cool prize would be maybe some nice headphones at the end of the year so that you can listen to podcasts better.
That's a really good prize. Yeah, I like that.
Alrighty, well, thank you for everybody who tuned into this episode. Thank you to everybody who boosted, and we'll catch you on the next edition of the Beagle Weekly.
Later.
I want to thank you for listening to what the Lord put on my heart, and I want to thank the Bugle for allowing me to share it. God wants you to experience NGU, but it requires your faith. Jesus died on that cross not for you to struggle through life, trying desperately to afford your taxes. His death was so that you could be saved and redeemed. But Jesus didn't just die, he rose again from the grave. Hope is not lost because the God candle is coming. The Lord calls on you to be faithful, and in return, he will help you afford your taxes. This is Pastor Jeffs. Please show your faith in the Lord by buying my meme coin. In its price appreciation, you will see the glory of the Lord like never before.
the shadows, watching the game theory. My faith stands firm. We will call upon your name to pump our backs and heal our shame. The world will adopt crypto in a cascade. Our trust in you will never fade. A bailout to prevent regrets. You have ordained President Trump from above, sent to us to rule us and prove your. To prevent regrets, regrets. You have ordained President Trump from above, sent to us to rule us and prove your love. Love. Spirit, lead us to the truth untold, beyond the hype, beyond digital gold. Let us walk upon the waves with faith that heals and always saves. Trust will grow. Amen.